Okay, like deja vu, we're going to reconnect with Michael Bastien, the Algonquin healer, as we talk about his work, Iroquois Supernatural. And Michael will be next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, here we go. Michael Bastien is an Algonquin healer, elder, former student of famous medicine man Wallace Mad Bear Anderson and healer Ted Williams. Michael raised outside of Buffalo, New York, attending a small rural public school, and he spent most of his youth observing and relating to the natural world. During his rebellious youth, as he says, he met medicine man Wallace Mad Bear Anderson, and a great blend of worlds began for them. Mad Bear reinforced the teachings that Michael remembered from nature and brought him to the roots that he never knew he had. Here he is, Michael Bastien on Coast to Coast. Hello, Michael.
Hello, George. How are you?
Good. Good to have you with us, my friend. What's new?
I'm glad to be here, and I can't explain whatever happened here, but I think that's new.
Sometimes there are forces beyond our control.
Absolutely. Well, this is a work that is to try to help people become familiar with what is termed paranormal. I think was activities within the Iroquois people that they would term as normal. So when we understand that this life can present a lot of mystery, if we stay connected and we stay close to nature, we can start to see that there is a bigger plan that will provide us with insight to how to work with this life.
Did you find, Michael, that most Native American, I don't want to call them tribes, but sects, like the Iroquois, the Sioux, the Apache, were they all different in their belief systems, or did they have a common understanding?
There was a common understanding, but the Iroquois are quite different in the structure of how they existed. Most were referred to or understood to be tribes. These were a group of people who were connected by a language, and as they developed, they had encounters with beings that were, let's just say, messengers, or they brought insights. And they actually structured themselves to become nations. And that was the foundation of actually what the United States has structured itself or patterned itself after, how the Iroquois occupied such a large territory. And they developed this thing into nations, and they actually understood that if they developed this based on a spiritual understanding, that that would help the government grow or help their structure grow and understand that it's an interaction with the people and it's an interaction with nature.
How did their belief system get started, Michael?
Well, it was in the beginning, their stories talk about a lot of infighting, and they did have a lot of problems getting established. But as I said, they had a messenger that came to them and traveled amongst these people for a number of years and actually got them to understand that if they combined their efforts, if they brought themselves together as nations, they could actually achieve much higher understandings, and they could actually work with not only the people, but nature, and bring themselves to a place that I guess would be looked at as different from any other structure on the planet. And they actually are a group that has provided so much insight. And most times they don't really get the credit or get some type of recognition for the work that they've put into this.
The messenger or messengers, did it come in an angelic form or more of a extraterrestrial form? How did, or even a ghostly form?
Well, the latest one or the last one that they talk about was actually an individual. He had some peculiar traits and characteristics. He did have a name, but the name is so sacred that they never repeat the name in public, but they will talk quietly about it. And then if someone inquires, they will discuss that person's name. And they said the reason why they don't discuss it openly in public is that something that is very sacred should not be talked about in public, so they keep it in a very sacred manner. It's respect. And they said the only time that they would repeat that name or call upon it publicly is it when they need the assistance from this peace messenger.
But again, where do you think the messenger came from?
Actually, the origins claim that he traveled across the lakes, the Great Lakes, in a stone canoe. And then he traveled to the shores of Lake Erie and Lake Ontario, where he met these people, and he kind of settled in with them for a number of years, and that he brought insight and he brought teachings that they had never heard of before.
Can a stone canoe be misconstrued as a spacecraft, perhaps?
That's possible. I mean, when you bring in elements that are described by early people, there's a lot of things that we can look at and say, maybe the physics doesn't match up to what they're describing. But I have seen enough things so far that I know that they have these abilities to work with these forces that actually defy physics.
In the Iroquois teachings, they talk of stone giants. What's that relationship, Michael?
Well, stone giants is a pretty interesting area, because it was actually before the humans were on the planet. But this legend that's been handed down to them describes that these were beings that were actually assisting in the structuring of this land for the humans to occupy it. And they were very powerful beings. And when I asked questions to Mad Bear, he would say, "Have you ever heard of Bigfoot?" And I said, "Absolutely." And he said, "Well, our legends tell us that these beings were actually the first, what you would refer to as Bigfoot. But these beings, there were a few that were supernaturally powerful. And these beings would test their powers from time to time. And this one particular one wanted to show off to the Creator. So this being demonstrated some of the powers that he thought he had. And the Creator was not very impressed. But at one point, the Creator said he wanted to show this stone giant some impressive power. And when the Creator demonstrated it, the stone giant ended up with a crooked nose. And the reason for that was he bumped into a mountain that the Creator had placed right next to him.
Huh.
And the stone giant turned his head, and he bumped into this mountain. And because of that, the Creator told the stone giant, "You've abused your powers, and I'm going to remove all of the stone giants from the planet." And the stone giant thought about it for a second, and he responded and said, "You're right. I abused power. But if you will allow us to remain on the planet, we will finish the work that we were sent here for." And he said, "If you allow us to stay," he said, "we will remain out of sight, and we will not interfere with the other life forms on this planet."
So they were a little apologetic.
Yes, they were. And supposedly the legend says that that was granted and they were allowed to stay. And Mad Bear would say, he goes, "They are now what we view or think of as the Bigfoot. And they still hold some of those metaphysical powers."
Interesting. There could be, what, a couple thousand of them on the planet, maybe?
Oh, I think there's at least that many.
Well, and some people have thought that they were very dimensional or spiritual. So, you know, they could have had that connection, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I also kind of suppose that when we think of interdimensional, that it is actually a part of what we also think of as spiritual, because they can demonstrate a non-physical energy or a non-physical place that we don't actually see all the time. But there are instances and there are times when these places actually become visible, or we can start to recognize that there are other parts of creation.
Michael, in the Iroquois customs and traditions, were ghosts and entities and spirits a part of the norm?
They are. In fact, that's why when we start to address what people think of as paranormal, they already accept that these elements exist, and they exist for our benefit, not for our harm. And if we can work with them, if the teachings are handed down from the time that the children are small and you pass along this insight, the children actually take it from that point and go beyond it. They actually develop more insight. And that's what helps us get to this place where we're saying we are actually in a time when the cosmos is working with this and actually trying to assist us to help us become higher functioning conscious humans.
That's fascinating. And this culture, the Iroquois culture, I mean, who taught them this? I mean, did they have shamans within their tribes?
They did. And that is one of the parts of understanding that we need to assist other groups that are out there, that they have shamans within their population. But the mainstream doesn't like to accept terms or entities like that because they don't buy into a lot of the concepts that hold us back. And they want these people to become actually higher functioning, not only physically, but higher functioning consciously. Excuse me. And then they can pass that insight. And we don't just pass it to say, here, be content at the level in which we're teaching. You take this and go beyond. We all have that ability to take it to a higher level. A lot of it is connected to behavior. How we actually live our lives will influence and give us options or abilities to move to these higher places.
Michael, in your book, Iroquois Supernatural, the subtitle is Talking Animals and Medicine People. What do you mean by talking animals?
Well, talking animals are actually real events. These are experiences where the natural world has provided assistance from other species of animals, which will come into, this is a part of what they call the clan system. And the clan system is that you recognize the geographic area in which you live, there are certain animals that inhabit that place. And it was, in a sense, an experiential place where they said, in the early days of the creation, we were supposed to be the caregivers or the caretakers of all of the life. We're basically what they call a custodian. And you take care of these other elements because they provide us with food, they provide us with clothing, and beyond those physical things, there are certain traits and there are certain characteristics that a wolf will have, that a deer has, that turtles have, that some of the birds have, the eagles, and that's why they understood that it was something of a deeper insight or a deeper recognition of how to treat this life and honor it in a way which we don't see today. We haven't seen it too much in other places,
right,
but it was a part of what they call a way of life.
Does the Iroquois have prophecy like the Hopis?
They do. Their prophecies are very similar to the Hopis, but they change a bit where they talk about the geographic area in which they were from. But when you talk about events and the times that they recognized that they said we would enter into, and the reason why we would enter into those is they said there would be behavior by other human beings that would develop these consequences. These consequences wouldn't occur rapidly, but over time, as it accumulated this energy, the cosmos would only have one way to respond to it, but it would give many, many warnings, and it would give you a lot of signs that would tell you things are becoming dangerously out of balance. And if you don't come back to your roots, if you don't express this, live it, and share it with other people, then we would be, in a sense, waiting to see or having to go through a very difficult period of time.
Well, and of course, Hopi prophecy, Michael, talks about the end of the United States and really, you know, the blue star. Iroquois similar to that?
It is similar. I'm thinking and perceiving that it won't be necessarily the end of the United States. It will be the end of a system that has misled most of the people. This is why the Iroquois people have been very cautious about bringing this information out to the public, because it can cause fear, and it can make people almost make them think that the Iroquois are against this country, and actually they're not against this country. They love this country. This is their land. This is where they were the first inhabitants. And so they don't want to see drastic, horrible things to happen to the people or to the land. And it really is one of those things where it can be misconstrued or misunderstood that they are holders or predictors of doom and gloom. And actually, they're trying to say, we need to reform while there is time, while we can still act on this and be responsible. We can actually change or alter the path if we were heading in a direction of trouble. We can actually head that off, and that's why I say the behavior is actually one of the main components that is causing what we see as the changes are so dramatic. Because when the natural world sees other humans destroying their own life-giving elements, and it says you have to change the ways in which you're doing, that's why it gives us many, many warnings. And it says, if you continue on that path, then these things will happen. And I'm convinced that we are at a very close juncture of almost saying we've gone too far and we can't go back. I'm not of that mentality. I want to think that we always have an opportunity to reverse and to change, and we can improve, or we can, at least if we can't prevent, we can diminish some of these events that are coming.
All right, and let's talk about some of those events and also dark magic when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Shapeshifters, dark magic. More with Michael Bastien when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We'll take your phone calls next hour with Michael Bastien. Michael, dark magic, also called witchcraft. Some people say it can be used for good. What do you say?
Absolutely. I've seen it demonstrated. It can also be used for bad, but the example that I saw used was when someone wants to identify an energy or a force that's being disruptive, in order to identify who's connected to that, and there are humans that do connect with those energies. I had seen it demonstrated one time. Mad Bear actually used some plants, and he made this medicine, and he asked a few of us if we were interested in participating in this overnight ceremony, which at the time I didn't have a clue what that was about. But as time went on over the decades, it started to sink in because someone asked me, they said, well, what were the plants? And I described it. And they told me, they said, that's used for witchcraft. They said, are you sure? And I said, yeah, that's what he was using. And what I was able to piece together over time, and that's why insight is so important for us to pay attention to and to utilize it to help us understand. And what he was doing is he was calling in these elements that he knew can be very disruptive to the human life. And he said there were problems that were going on, and he said in order to find out, he said, I need to hear from these beings. And what I was able to piece together over the years by having conversation with other elders, and they said, that tricky guy called in these elements, recognized who they were connected to, and that's what was the purpose for bringing them in, is he knew that if he had to find out who they were connected to, he warned us ahead of time. He said, if you're going to participate, the ceremony starts at sundown. It won't end until sunrise. And he said, if you hear a knock at the door, if you hear a voice call your name, he said, you don't respond. He said, we want to see what is out there, and he says, and we need to fix this problem. So as we went through the evening, I swear there was someone walking across the roof of his house. And we did hear sounds that I've never heard before. And in the morning, Mad Bear said he got the information he needed. And as we traveled out west, he stopped in the places that he was scheduled to meet with certain other elders. And then it turned out that he passed along the information to the people who asked for his help. And he said, he gave the name. He said, this is the person, he said, whom I heard the voice. And he said, as soon as I heard the voice, I recognized that was the link that was causing the disruption. So you can use these elements in a positive and a good way by demonstrating that you need to get it to come in and expose itself. And actually, when people talk about evil and they talk about the darkness and those energies, the best way to fix those things is not to hide them or to run from them, but to bring them out into the open. And you don't want to do this as an individual. You do it collectively with a group of practitioners who understand, here's how we can deal with these things, and here's where we put it in its proper place.
Are there some, though, Michael, who dabble with the dark magic in an evil way?
Yes, there are. And I can give you another example.
Please. Yeah.
Who did these things, and they actually demonstrated it on Mad Bear. They had gone to another, what they call medicine person, a practitioner of these gifts and these abilities. And this medicine person said, okay, I will assist you. This person didn't actually do the involvement directly, but indirectly was able to instruct people who wanted to, well, maybe not do harm, but do a lot of disruption to Mad Bear. And Mad Bear had an ability to read these things that were being disruptive as they started to interfere with his life. And he saw, he would do readings to see what was and where it came from, see what was coming. And one of the fellas that used to visit with Mad Bear, and I would see him quite often, he told me, he said, you should have been here last night. I said, why? He says, there was this thing that came through the air. He said it was right near sunset. He said, but this thing flew through the air, landed in Mad Bear's tree. And I said, what do you mean a thing? He said, the only way I can describe this, he said, it looked like a flying liver. He said it squawked, it made these sounds that he's never heard before. He said Mad Bear came out, he witnessed that, he ran back in his house, he grabbed some medicines, he started to talk to it in Tuscarora. He said he pointed to the sky, and he was talking to that thing, and he said that thing left the tree and headed back from the direction which it came. So I asked Mad Bear, I said, what's going on? What was this? He said, well, there's a person across the lake who is trying to cause a little problem. And he said, she's not directly involved, but she put these kids up to this. And when Mad Bear was viewing this, either intuitively or actually doing a reading to view this, he said when an average person will point in a direction, they usually point with their index finger. And he said, if you do that, he said, point for me. And I demonstrated. And he said, now turn your hand up. He said, you have three fingers pointing back at you. He said, when people who are practitioners of this energy, when they point with their whole arm and their hands flat, and all the fingers are pointing in the same direction. And he said, all I did was tell this thing to go back where it came from and never to come back and bother anybody here again. So he said, it went back to the people who sent it, and he said, but it came back to them with three times the force that they sent it out.
Yep, it always does, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Yeah. And he said they were contacting him, asking him to stop this bad medicine and telling him to stop it. And he said, I'm not creating any bad medicine. He said, I can't stop something that I didn't start. He said, all I did was send it back to whoever sent this. He said, if they want to stop it, he said, they have to go back to the other practitioner and they have to work with them to have this thing to stop.
Tell me a little bit about false face. What is false face?
Well, false face and the false faces are, it's a part of the culture which when most people observe from the outside, they would call those masks. And the masks can be ceremonial. It doesn't mean that they all are. But the ones that are ceremonial are the ones that they call false faces. And they actually have ceremony to bring these false faces into a place where they gather once a year and they bring their sacred cornmeal and they actually feed these masks and they have ceremony with them to tell them. And actually the masks are constructed with the design of the crooked nose that goes back to the stone giants. And the name of that mask, they call it Hot Dewey. Now, the Hot Dewey, the Iroquois say, it's the most powerful. They don't go into a lot of detail, although I know people in that society, and I know Mad Bear was in that society. And the reason they don't go into a lot of detail publicly is they said, this is a very sacred area. And they said, we honor and respect that by not just talking about it to anybody. Another example that verified these statements, Mad Bear would have many visitors. And there was a time I happened to be there, and a man came into his house. And when he walked in, he started to stare at Mad Bear's false face. And Mad Bear asked him politely, he said, you know, he said, you don't really understand, but he says, that's like staring at another human. He said, if you stare too long, it's uncomfortable. He said, I don't want you to disturb or make the false face feel uncomfortable. And the guy didn't really buy into this. So Mad Bear explained a little bit more to him. And he said, you know, when we use these for ceremony, he said, it's our responsibility to treat them as a living thing. And he said, we feed them. And the guy was not buying into it even more. So Mad Bear told him, he said, look, I don't know who you are or why you're here. And the man identified himself as a reporter. And Mad Bear said, well, I'm glad that you do investigative work. And he said, I'm going to show you something that I don't usually show to most people. He said, the hair on this false face grows. He said, these are living things. And the man kind of chuckled, but Mad Bear said, come on over. He said, we'll measure the length of the hair. He said, you come back in a year from now, and we will remeasure that hair. Hmm. When the man came back, they remeasured the hair, and the hair had grown. He never made any more comments or ridiculed Mad Bear. He said, you know, he says, I almost have to see things like this to believe that it's possible. And when those things are demonstrated, and here's the part that seems to be really difficult for the outside world to understand. These experiences are not made or designed for entertainment. They're not there for us to show off. And when they can be shown, and he did that for a specific reason, to have someone come to recognition that there are inexplainable events and there are things that just don't make logic sense to us, but they are a part of this insight and this understanding that they've held on to for centuries. And they've keep developing these abilities and keep developing these talents. But there's been a period of time when there was a great disturbance or a great interruption of these teachings. And that was shortly after the European arrival. It really got interfered with. And at that particular time, the Iroquois were very open and willing to share all of these insights. But they didn't fit into the type of structure that we're experiencing right now. And we can kind of see that the structure that we are going through is just about maxed itself out.
I was going to say, Michael, are we going through, based on what they see, some incredible times, and are these times fixable?
They are fixable, but at the current state and the current ways that people are addressing it, they're using the same old, that doesn't do anything. And what we really need to do and what we're hoping to do is use this opportunity to get this information into everybody's hands, make it available to everyone. It is probably intro 101 of reconnecting with people who they believe, but believing only is one part of. They need to interact with. But this is where it comes into a place where you say, be careful and cautious, because we can enter into places that we may think that we are prepared and we're ready to handle or encounter. And there is one portion of when we ask people to take the initiative and we say, ask for help. Ask for insight, and we give them what we have as one of the elements which we know works to assist with this. It's what we call sacred tobacco. It's a plant that we grow locally here, but it's only used for ceremony.
Sacred tobacco. What would they call it?
Well, it is in the tobacco family, but it's not designed for leisurely smoking.
Is it peyote? Or...
No, it's not peyote. It is a powerful plant. The legend behind that goes back to a flood time when it was a purification of the planet. And that was one of the first plants to come back to the native people. And because of that, they've honored by using this plant when someone is sick, when we need to collect medicine, when we need to ask for assistance, we offer this. You burn it. You can make a small fire, and you can put it in a small fire. Some people will put it in a pipe, but it certainly is not something you would want to inhale. Now, when the offering is made, one of the things that I've experienced with feedback from a lot of people is they'll say, well, you know, we did what you said, and they said that was months and months ago, and they said, we're still waiting. And I said, there is one part I probably should have had you include. I said, you see, because we all have an ego, we always think that we're ready to encounter certain insights or learn about certain information. And I said, the problem with that is we think we're ready. I said, you need to include this little disclaimer while you're doing this. And that disclaimer is, when I'm ready. I said, because we all think that we're ready, and most times we're not. And I said, you could walk out of the place where you made the offering. The information you asked for could cross your path, and you would continue to walk on by and not even recognize it, and yet your prayer was answered, but you weren't ready to recognize it. So there's a lot of little insights here that we want to pass along to assist people to help them have more success with their insight journey and with their practitioning.
Well, that might work. Now, when they picked up their teachings, which influenced their prophecy, and we may not have time for this, but I want you to think about this, Michael, if you can.
Mm-hmm.
What do they say about the future? I mean, are they upbeat about it?
Well, the future is actually very similar to many of the other prophecies, the other warnings that are out there, which does tell us we could avoid most of these changes to the degree in which we're seeing them now. But when we saw that last earthquake that hit Japan, the feeling that came into me was, it's too late. And the reason why I believe that it's too late, and I don't like to believe that, but the reason that I believe that it's too late is collectively, in order to get enough people together to initiate a change to the cosmos, to signal the cosmos to say, no, wait, don't continue on with these activities. We really can address this. There is a lag time.
All right, stay with us. We're going to come back and take phone calls next hour on Coast to Coast AM.